Joshua R. Clark is a ceramic artist who lives and works in Las Cruces, New Mexico, where he is an assistant professor of art at New Mexico State University. His solo show at the Zolo Gallery in El Paso opens on November 9th and will be on exhibit through December 14th. Here to talk ceramics is artist Joshua Clark. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Thank you for having me.
So how did you get interested in ceramics?
I took a ceramics class when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And so I became interested at that time.
Was it like hand building or were you using the wheel?
It was mostly wheel throwing.
Yeah.
My teacher at the time had a friend who was getting rid of a kick wheel.
Oh.
And they did this, like, pull a name out of a hat to see who would get it. And
yeah.
I actually got it.
No way.
Which was great. It kind of kickstarted my interest in ceramics. And
were your parents like, what the heck are you going to do with this wheel?
Absolutely. And it was kind of beautiful because I didn't have a kiln.
Yeah.
So I would throw on this wheel with no ability to fire the object. So I would just
throw.
Beautiful thing about clay is like you can throw a thing and then wedge it back into a ball and then throw it again. So
yeah.
It allowed me to practice without any type of end goal or anxiety about the finished thing.
So it wasn't ever like, I have to get a kiln? That
right.
wasn't the thought process?
No.
It was just like, I'm going to do this and keep doing it.
Right. It was just more sort of about the process of throwing on the wheel at
and
that time.
We fast forward to now. I mean, I was looking at the website for the Zolo Gallery, and it's all these neat, very precise shapes.
Right.
Are they a mixture of hand-built, or are they molds, or how are you building nowadays?
So the end product is mostly mold making, and so I'm casting the object. So some of the forms I'm first making out of clay, and then I'm making a mold of it.
Okay.
But more often, I'm finding objects from my everyday experiences. So I'm always on the lookout for objects that I feel have some ability to communicate what I say, something telling about human psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, things that kind of recede into the background that we might not notice, but are very much a part of our everyday experiences.
Do you think it's because as humans, we're looking to identify with stuff? Because I think before we started recording, I tell you, every time I see a hanger on the women's restroom, it looks like a little octopus to me, or like it has a nose or an elephant, or I don't know. But I think I'm looking for it. I don't know if it's in our nature or,
I think so. I always say to my students that I don't think human beings have changed a lot. Like we have
right.
different access to our desires. But, you know, I don't think Instagram is like that different from the impulse of like a king and a queen having their portraits painted, wanting to have like their nicest.
Yeah.
But they have objects in those that they want to be stand-ins for the self. So they've got their pearls or their robes or whatever they have in their hair. And I don't think that that impulse is so different from like displaying your breakfast to your friends on Instagram. It's just everybody has access to it now.
I mean, it is pretty, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's why you took a picture of it,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you teach that? Because ceramics requires patience.
Mm-hmm.
It requires being okay with stuff blowing up in the kiln. And then it requires being okay with the loss.
Absolutely.
And you're teaching folks that are living in a faster world.
Yeah.
Two-prong question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you digest that? And then how do you teach that to your students?
It's definitely not for everybody. But I think that a lot of people are sort of yearning for that pace to slow down. But I tell all of my students that you really have to be okay with failure in this class. And failure is just an opportunity to learn. And it's very rare that anybody just picks up ceramics and is immediately...
Something's got to blow up on you.
Absolutely. And your most prized possession,
yes,
most of the time.
The thing
yeah.
you spent the most time on, the
yeah.
thing you love the most, that's the one that's destined to blow up.
Absolutely. And so for myself, even to this day where I'm a pretty efficient maker at this point in time, but
yeah.
typically I make something at least three times before I'm satisfied.
Really?
With it, if it's a new idea. And of course, mold making makes that easier because I can just cast the thing.
Well, yeah, because your molds are like, I mean, these are some of the cleanest molds I've seen. And I don't know if it's because they haven't been used yet or...
No, I actually, in my early 20s, I'm from Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
And I worked for a commercial ceramic company called Mako Colors, which is a great, amazing company.
All the glazes, no?
Yeah.
I can, yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Best people in the world. A little shout out to them. But I was going to school at Ohio State and getting a sort of traditional art academic degree. But at the same time, I was getting this kind of like old school apprentice.
Real world.
Yeah. So where I was learning how to make commercial molds, commercial glazes, was a production potter. And there, in contrast to art school where kind of anything went, at Mako, there was a right way to do something.
Right.
And there was like a technical ability that was important. So it was really great to be getting these two kind of educations at the same time.
What do you think you learned more from?
I would say that in terms of my technical ability to make things, absolutely Mako.
Yeah.
No questions asked. But I think being able to think through why I was making things, the university.
That's a good segue into your show because it's really neat, like melee of very practical things, but presented in these kind of pastel Miami deco-y situations, or at least that's the vibe I was getting.
Again, so I'm choosing these kind of like mundane, if you will, objects, but I think of them almost as like pop songs.
Yeah, you're like, live your best life.
Yeah. and the thing I'm interested about in that is I like these things that sort of capture our attention for like very surface reasons. We're like, I just like the color of that, or
right.
I like the sound of that beat. But I think anything that sort of resonates universally like that to a lot of people must have some deeper kind of universal core that...
There's a reason why those beats are certain.
Yeah.
There's certain beats that are hits. There's a reason
yeah.
why these things exist in our lives.
Absolutely. You know, I think that there must be something, even if we can't articulate quite why, but there must be a reason why Michael Jackson's music is like just sticks with us and
right.
is kind of timeless. And I don't know exactly why
what
that is, you know, but I'm interested in that phenomenon.
So are we making pop songs out of just regular everyday things, you think?
To a
Maybe?
Point. And I'm hoping that, you know, I'm fine with people who just look at them and say, wow, that's kind of nice or nice
yeah,
to look at.
Yeah, you don't know.
But if you can sit with the things longer, you can, there's other things to unpack in them, potentially.
So what do you want folks to unpack when they see this show?
I don't necessarily want to steer them in any direction, but we have a piece in front of us right now that's called Palm Someday, which the title sort of comes from this or thing in the Christian Bible of Palm Sunday,
yeah.
which I didn't grow up with religion as really part of my life, but my wife's family did. So I was
People
sort of
do, yes.
I was introduced to these things later on. And so maybe something that other people would take for granted. I was like, this whole experience is kind of aesthetic. You know, like you come in and everybody has this like little palm that they're waving. And to me, it felt like, wow, this is just like,
well, this is awesome.
Yeah. My impulse to like be at the beach or something. But then like unpacking it maybe a little bit more, like this is like a plastic grapes that I've made a mold of, which...
Oh, but they're upside down.
Right. And so, you know, the blood of Christ.
Right.
And then it has this door stopper in it, which to me could be like the nail that's like driven into his hand or something. But also this idea
or
of
like wedge it out of there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or of like opening a door is like kind of this like gesture of like an openness or whatever. So like, I'm not that interested in there being a sort of linear narrative, but at least these things that maybe you can jump between that are like, oh, wow, there's a doorstop or there's a grapevine, there's this thing. And,
yeah.
and whatever potential that has for a viewer to create their own little narrative is what I'm interested in.
Well, there is something fun in finding mundane things
and
something that you think is complicated.
Right.
You know, we were having another conversation earlier where, you know, folks think like, well, I don't understand it. Or I don't know what it is. But, but, you know, to your point, if it makes you feel something, if you can make some discoveries while you're there.
Well, I would say that in most of our daily experiences, like the things that are around us, they're not there to create linear narratives or meaning, but we create meaning out of them. And so I am after sort of a likeness to moving through the world in that way, where we just come upon desperate things and then we connect them. That's what our brains do. And so that's sort of what I'm interested in.
So you must see stories and situations just like everywhere all the time.
I don't know if they're stories, but there's like a potential or I'm constantly questioning, why do we do these things? Or like, why do we surround ourselves with these objects? And I don't think it's for no reason most of the time.
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, some of these things are super practical. The doorstop wedge, it's just a wedge, whatevs, but like, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
If you really stop to appreciate it.
No, yeah. And it's like, how timeless is the wedge?
It doesn't need anything.
Right.
It's just that. Or if you're resourceful, it's just a piece of wood.
Absolutely. And that same shape has served so many different purposes throughout time. Right now, it props a door open, but who knows, that same shape could have helped build the pyramids. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate you putting all of these things together and I guess highlighting the mundane.
Yeah.
The show's going to be at the Zolo Gallery. It's located at 2812 North Piedras. The show opens on Saturday, November 9th from 6 to 8 p.m. And then the show runs through December 14th. Gallery hours are from 1 to 4 p.m. or by appointment. But the easiest thing to do is just visit zologallery.com. And that's XOLOgallery.com to make some arrangements. But for now, I encourage you to check out Joshua's work on the website. And I encourage you even further to see it in person. Today, my guest has been Joshua Clark. He's a ceramicist who is having a solo show at the Zolo Gallery. Thank you for coming to State of the Arts.
Thank you for having me.